two, but I can wing it and squeeze it into three as well. It's page 55, is what it is.
So why don't you do that? Do page 55, and then I'll burn through two, and then you take three back over. Cool.
All right, 2 minutes. God.
Turn to page 55. So I'm going to briefly go over this page because to me it's my favorite page when I'm taking someone through the second step. Before we go over page 55, I want to read something out of another spiritual book about what it may or may not look like to walk a spiritual path. This is called A Basket of Fresh Bread. There is a basket of fresh bread on your head, yet you go door to door asking for crusts. Knock on the inner door, no other. Sloshing knee deep in clear steam water, you keep wanting a drink from other people's water bags. Water is everywhere around you, but you see only barriers that keep you from the water. A horse is moving beneath the rider's thighs, yet still the rider asks, "Where's my horse?" Right there under you. Yes, this is a horse, but where is the horse? Can't you see? Yes, I can see, but whoever saw such a horse? Mad with thirst, he cannot drink from the stream running so close by his face. He is like a pearl on the deep bottom, wondering, inside the shell, where is the ocean? His mental questionings form the barrier. His physical eyesight bandages his knowing. Self-consciousness plugs his ears. Stay bewildered in God, and only that. And this is a wonderful description of how we will look for things and continuously seek some type of arrival place in money, relationships, food, sex, work, whatever it is. We will convince ourselves, if I can just get the American dream, If I can just have that white picket fence, if I can just have the money in the bank, the excessive vacations, I will have arrived. And so I've got a buddy of mine, really close friend of mine. He and I are both experiencing this emptiness and loneliness in our lives. Mine comes from this idea that I am 42. You know, recently, you know, I got divorced a year and a half ago. The society says I should not be 42 and by myself. I should be in a relationship. And I should be doing certain things at 42. And then I struggle with the regret because I was sort of the instigator in my relationship falling apart with my ex-wife. So my emptiness and loneliness has more to do with this physical solitude and isolation that I experience. I love spending time by myself, but at the same time, it becomes too much at times. On the other hand, his emptiness and isolation, he's married. He has two kids. He has a wonderful career. He's got buku money in the bank. He's going on excessive vacations. He's obsessively exercising because it's time to go to the beach and blah, 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 blah. But yet, our experience of emptiness and loneliness is the same. So he and I were bouncing this back and forth and found it quite fascinating because we're still looking for something. Right? And emptiness, is, I don't think of empty as a label of negativity. It's not. There's something else to the emptiness. There is an inspirational quality there that happens. That's for step 11, though. And so along the lines of that reading where they're trying to tell you, man, that, you know, this guy is in the stream and can't see the water. He's on the horse and doesn't know he's on the horse. We are immersed in God and forget. And this is what page 55 is all about. Yet we had been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world, people who rose above their problems. They said God made these things possible and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but liked to tell ourselves it wasn't true. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every woman, man, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, which is ego, by worship of other things, but in some form or other it is there. For power and a faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of higher power or God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality, my favorite description of God, the great reality, one of my favorite, deep down within us. In the last analysis, that's when, in the last analysis, it is only there that the higher power of God may be found. It was so with us. We can only clear the ground a bit. If our testimony this weekend helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, and encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief, just the awareness of the belief, is sure to come to you. So on this page, they just told us how we're going to find God. They told us where we're going to find God. And they told us when we're going to find God. In the last analysis, unfortunately for us. Because it's the last place we're ever going to look is inside ourselves to find this conscious contact. We will constantly believe that it is somewhere outside of us. And so that was a big bridge for me to cross, was the belief that what I grew up with, which was God was up there, I'm down here. If I want to get to God, I got to do a bunch of good things here and lie about all the bad things that I do, and I'll get to God one day maybe. Because that's what I saw everybody else around me doing. So this is important, because if you're sitting in here and you have a problem with God, it is not God that you have a problem with. You just have a problem with the version of God that you grew up with. And the beautiful part about the 12 steps is you can create a new version. No one I've ever sponsored, when they're pissed at God, is pissed at my God, at my version of God. They're pissed at the one they grew up with, and they assume that's the only one. There are probably as many versions of God there are people on this planet. Right? We have our traditions, and there's 100-something religions on this planet, by the way, if you didn't know that. And none of them know if they're right, and none of them know if they're wrong. That doesn't matter here. You know, we're looking for something that's just like you can smell it and taste it. I know our book says that you won't be able to smell, touch, taste, or feel. My experience is you can. Right? It just depends on the school you want to belong to when it comes to what is God. What is a higher power? And that's, to me, the most beautiful part of our steps, because they allow us to investigate all of it. Whereas the other things don't. They're like, believe this way or rotten hell. That's not what we're talking about here. We're telling you to go in, jump in with both feet, and just investigate and have some fun with it. So I'm going to let Brandon take care of the rest of the second step.
This one's called Solutions. Don't be afraid to explore. Without exploration, there are no discoveries. Don't be afraid of partial solutions. Without the tentative, there is no accomplishment. Indecision and procrastination are corrosive habits. Those who wait for every little thing to be perfect before they embark on a project, or who dislike the compromise of a partial solution, are among the least happy. Ideal circumstances are seldom given to anyone for an undertaking. Instead, there is uncertainty in every situation. The wise are those who can wrest great advantage from circumstances opaque to everyone else. Wanting everything in life to be perfect before you take action is like wanting to reach a destination without travel. For those who follow spirit, travel is every bit as important as the destination, one step after another. That is still is still central to the wisdom of spirit. Every day passes whether you participate or not. I'm going to read that again. Every day passes whether you participate or not. If you are not careful, years will go by and you will only have regrets. If you cannot solve a problem all at once, at least make a stab at it. Reduce your problems into smaller, more manageable packages, and you can make measurable progress towards achievement. If you wait for everything to be perfect according to your preconceived plans, then you may well wait forever. If you go out and work with your current life, you may find that success comes from building upon small things. So, I don't know where I got this story from, but there are these prospectors prospecting for gold out, let's say Alaska, just for fun. And they're going into a stream and they find some gold. And so they want to place a claim on this land. So they go back into town and there's five of them. They say, hey, don't talk to anybody. Don't say anything. Don't let anybody know where we got this, because we want to stake our claim on that land and we don't want anybody to know that we're staking our claim on it. And so they go into town, they get their gold, they gather their supplies, and they check with each other. They're like, did you guys talk to anybody? Did you say anything? Everybody's like, no, we're good. So they get out to where their claim is, and they're getting ready to place their claim, and all these guys show up. And they're like, what are you guys doing here? Who told you? And they're all like blaming each other for all these other people showing up. And one of the guys that showed up late says, nobody told us. We could see it in your eyes. When somebody finds something that is that valuable, you look at their eyes and you know that they've got it. You know that they found whatever it was that they were looking for. And I suspect, I don't know, but I suspect that if you guys go into different meetings around your town or this town or even here, if you look at the people that are genuinely hooked up, there's something different going on in their eyes. There's a different level of existence that you haven't accessed. And you know they have it, and you're wondering what it is that they've got, but you still can't find it. This is the threshold of where that is found. walking into the second step. Like the reading I said, I read before break, there is no hope in the first step for me. There's this idea in the rooms of AA and CA and things like that. There's hope in step one. There's no fucking hope in step one. If I look at my experience in step one and I do a thorough job, the only thing that it shows me is that every time, no matter what I do, I end up in the exact same place. Over and over and over and over again. And the only way that I am aware of to break that cycle is to change and hook up with something different. Okay, and that's where you start to explore this in the second step. So to be doomed to an alcoholic or addict death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. For a lot of people, they look like the same thing, right? Spiritual life looks like death. I'll just pick death. The cool thing is that if you've been right at the threshold of death, you actually get to a point where you realize you don't want that and you want to explore something else. That's what happened to me about 2 weeks before I was struck sober, is I had this desire to connect with something. Now, the desire wasn't enough because it only sobered me up for 4 days. So the difference between the people that make it and the people that don't make it, to me, is gaining access to, okay? Book talks about consciousness over and over and over again. And really having an experience with whatever this thing is. You hear me refer to it as power. You'll hear me refer to it as the universe or this thing or that which is. Sometimes I'll say God because it's easy. But there's a multitude. I've got a stack of books that could probably almost fill this table at the house that have all the different religions that I've explored and looked at, and books that are referenced to. Because to me, it's all open. It's all there. People have been exploring what God is for forever, since the dawn of man. And so I don't latch on to one and say this is it. So just for fun, the God in heaven, whatever you view as God is in heaven, what are some of the qualities, physical qualities, I'll say, that God has?
Loving.
What's that?
Loving.
Loving. Physical qualities, though.
A robe.
He's got a robe on, right? Beard. White hair. But just throw the ones out. Like, these are good. Like,
staff.
A staff. He's a dude, right? He's a dude with sandals. Okay. So we got sandals, staff, robe, beard, hair. Probably long, luscious locks, right? Hair is the hair gray or brown or what? Silver, yeah, like maybe platinum, right? Like, yeah, something. Fiery eyes, or maybe powerful eyes, like something, you know. Okay, all right. So this is good. So looks very similar to what, like, if we were to look at the painting on the Sistine Chapel, kind of similar to that, right? The little finger coming down. Okay, so let's just for fun, if I say Zeus, what are some of the images that you come up with for Zeus?
Lightning. Thunderbolt.
Okay. So a lot of the same qualities Zeus has that the god that you have in your mind, right? Okay, well, Zeus is a pagan god, right? That existed like thousands of years ago that like Christianity proved doesn't exist, but yet the God that you just described, the Christian God, looks just like it. So, does that maybe kind of make you wonder where your concept of God came from?
Society.
Yeah.
What we were taught.
What you were taught. What you were, Let's face it, if you live in this country, you're programmed into a Christian belief. It's just what it is. The founders of this country were seeking religious freedom, and generally we're Christian. Our laws are basically based off of Christian belief systems and things like that. It's on our money, right? So it's not surprising then that we've been dealt, just even from a cultural standpoint, this idea of what God is, right? And so it's in Roswell, New Mexico, back in the middle of the 1900s, there was a the Air Force came out and they identified that they sent out a media statement letting people know that there was a UFO in the area. Okay. The next morning, they released another statement that said that it was a weather balloon. So what did they do? They created the argument. Okay? They created a dichotomy. UFO, weather balloon. Let the debate start. Was it a UFO? Was it a weather balloon? What was it not? Anything else? Exactly. Usually people don't get that. Good job. So it's either this or it's this. It can't be anything out here. They created the box which the debate gets into. Okay? Christianity in this country has done the same thing. You either believe in Jesus Christ, the one and only Savior, or you're going to hell. What is it not? What if it is something else? What if you just open your mind just this much to the possibility that it's something else? Because I tell you, the people that struggle with God, they've got this idea of this punishing God that hates them, that's going to that they're going to hell and all this other stuff, and it's not serving them, right? People will have this resentment towards God and say God doesn't exist. Well, how do you hate something that doesn't exist? The idea of atheism, of a belief in nothing, is a belief. So, if you really experience in that first step, just like that prayer, that first night, when I was back at the house doing the weepy cry, snotty cry, the just couldn't control myself. And I got down next to the bed and I said, God, I don't know if you're out there or not, but please just make it better. And a sense of calm came over me. I climbed back up in bed and fell right asleep. Okay? So I don't know what that God was that I was praying to, but I was praying to something and I got a result. So I developed a little bit of faith in that moment that, okay, this thing, prayer, I do it, I get a result. Okay, let's explore that some more. So when I get to this part, and when I see that I'm either doomed to an alcoholic death or a spiritual basis of life, I can tell you that if there's a third option there, people never choose the spiritual way of life. If it's death, spiritual way of life, or just a little marijuana maintenance, they always pick marijuana maintenance. Death, spiritual life, new girlfriend. Death, spiritual way of life, new job. Move to a new city. Get a new sponsor. Whenever there's a third option, the spiritual way of life is generally not picked. I would say always, but there's probably cases where. So when you get to that level of hopelessness, the willingness is created. Okay? And in that willingness is the idea of exploration of whatever it, God, Buddha, Jesus, Allah, is. So if a mere code of morals or better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism or drug addiction, many of us would have recovered long ago, right? So just think the drink through. Do the next right thing. Those are philosophies, code of morals. Just don't drink no matter what. The doctor's opinion calls it frothy emotional appeal. Just do it for her. Just do it for them. Just do it for your kids. You should want to make something out of your life. Frothy emotional appeal. Code of morals. Better philosophy of life. How many of those things work for you? If you're here, none. Just to let you know. I'm going to ask you questions, give you the answers. So you know what they used to do to people that continued to make the wrong choice over and over and over again? Send them to loony bins, right? You know what we call them today? Treatment centers. You guys are all in a loony bin. You've been sent to a place because society doesn't know what to do with you. So you're here. Okay? Philosophy of life. Go to a treatment center. Go to a recovery place. That'll work. No, it won't. Unless you do something else. Okay? So what we really get down to is lack of power. Okay? It's what we are always seeking is power. That's our dilemma, right? And so that's kind of where this is where the book kind of, if you look at page 45 and you read that sentence, lack of power, that was our dilemma, you might like, if they started this book with lack of power, that's your dilemma, you would be like, well, no, I got an alcohol problem. I have a drug problem. No, you got a power problem. So you have to hook up to a power source that allows you to live your life in a certain way. And so we had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Guys struggle with this. I'm not sure that I can believe in a power greater than myself. And I'm like, you already do. Drugs are a greater power than you. The police are a greater power than you. Can you make the sun not come up tomorrow? At least Mother Nature is a bigger power than you. Pray to that, right? So we had to find a power greater than ourselves, but where and how are we to find this power? The book asks the question and then it answers it generally in the next sentence. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Okay, so it's telling over and over again throughout this book, it tells you that the purpose of the book is just this. Its main object. So the main object of this book that you all are required to carry around with you is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. So what's your problem? Lack of power, right? Most people say it's drugs. Most people say it's alcohol. If you do the bedevilment exercise that we went through on page 52 as the unmanageability exercise, all of those things are the manifestation of your problem, which is lack of power and getting people to behave and do and act the way that you want them to act. Your inability to control your emotional natures, all that is lack of power. And so what we gain access to in the second step is this ability to access this power. So page 47 there's a question that I like to change. So if you've gotten to this place where everything that you've ever tried didn't work, doesn't work, can't work, then you really have to just ask this question of, do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? And if a guy struggles with this question, I just ask him one question. Have you ever been wrong about anything before? And then if he says yes, my next question is it possible you're wrong about this? All I need is that much space. If a guy is emphatic that there is no God, that there is no power that can help him, that there's no chance that there's something out there, I shake his hand and say, well, let me know how that works out for you. Call me if you need anything, but I'm not going to work with you anymore. But if he gives me just that much, just usually the response I get is, I don't know, but I hope there's something. Great, that's enough to work with. Because he's finally admitted that he doesn't have the answer and that we can explore the answer. The second step opens that possibility. If you've been crushed by the first step, if you've been crushed by your life experience, the option that there's something else that can fix it opens up. If you just think that you're in here because of a bad set of circumstances, good. Let me know how it is when you go out there. If you have a problem with us talking about God, then go do what you were doing. And when you come back, if you come back, we'll still be talking about God. I hope you make it, but so many people don't. Today is the birthday of a guy that I sponsored that he had an unwillingness to forgive the person that had molested him as a child. And he believed that the only reason that he was an alcoholic and an addict was that he was molested as a child. And he was unwilling to explore the possibility that God could help him with that. And he's dead now. And on Facebook, the reminder of his birthday popped up today. And I think about his 6-year-old daughter that doesn't get to see her dad anymore. And it's all frothy emotional appeal. It's not going to convince anybody differently. I'm just telling you, that's an experience that I have with a guy that just refused to change his mind. So I like to change that question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself that can help me in every area of my life, even though I'm not sure that it's possible? You see, because my experience with God is much like, we've got multiple chicken coops around our farm, and you generally can't have them all out at once because, well, the roosters all want to, like, show dominance and kill the other roosters. But there's a way that you can insert an extra rooster into a coop where it'll still function and they won't kill each other. I'm not going to go into the explanation of how to do that, but so we've got this one coop, our biggest coop, that it's got the most number of hens in it. And Jasper is this kind of little wiry kind of like a blue collar kind of scrappy kind of guy, like the kind of guy that you don't really want to mess with because you don't know if he's ever going to really snap on you and just go crazy and drink too many Mountain Dews and attack you like a spider monkey might do, you know. But so there's that guy, and then there's Shemp, who's a bigger guy, he's brawnier, and he looks like he would be the badass, right? Like, he's just got that look about him. Well, so Jasper's the king of the coop, and he likes the ladies to be under his control. So he keeps an eye constantly on what Shemp's doing, right? Like watching where he's going. And so every once in a while, when Jasper's on the other side of a coop, Shemp will, like, hurry up and go over there and kind of get on one of the hens and, you know, get in there real quick. And then, like, out of nowhere, Jasper comes flying in, knocks them off the hen, and then they start going at it, right? Now, they're hurting each other while they're doing it, okay? But when I'm out there, I observe the experience of them in the fight, them in the battle. But because I know the dynamic and I know that Shemp knows that Jasper's the higher order, I know that they're never really going to kill each other. One of the other roosters gets out, somebody's dying, right? That's just, it's chaos when an extra rooster gets out. But like those two, like I observe the dynamic. I let them handle it however they do. You know, I want Shemp to get a little action every once in a while, but I'm not going to like hold Jasper back so that Shemp can get some action. Now, I love all these chickens, and they all have names, and they're wonderful, and I feed them, and I take care of them, and I give them the best possible opportunity for them to enjoy their life and to thrive. But I don't get involved in their business. Okay? And to me, that's the way that God interacts with us. Is God's this observer of the situation, gives them the best possible environment to thrive and to succeed, and loves them and wants them not to hurt each other, wants them not to kill each other, but doesn't get involved. Okay? Unless they're needed. Because what happens sometimes is one of them will get hurt and they will come and they will just follow you around. And they'll just be close to you because it's their way of saying, I need some help. I'm hurting. And sure enough, you pick them up, you find out that there's something wrong with them. But they come to you. But otherwise, we don't really do much with them. We let them kind of be. And so this idea that God's going to like intercede in your life to stop you from doing whatever, if you ask, it can happen. But God's generally going to let you do whatever you do. And there's no punishment for it other than what you impose on yourself.
Page 53.
So, after the bedevilments, it talks about when we saw... Others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe. We had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas didn't work, but the God idea did. And then it goes on to talk about the Wright brothers. And it's interesting because I've read this book a couple hundred times. And about a year ago, I read this paragraph differently than I had any other time. It said the Wright brothers' almost childish faith that they could build a flying machine was the mainspring of their accomplishment. Without that, nothing could have happened. Okay, I never really analyzed what the sentence is connected. Okay, but the way I read it now is without the Wright brothers' childish faith that they could do something, nothing could have happened. So the faith that the Wright brothers had was actually the motivating, the driving force in them accomplishing it. So whether you believe something to be true or not, you're right. Henry Ford said that. If you believe the steps won't work for you, guess what? They won't, because you will constantly seek proof that they won't work. If you believe that the steps will work for you, they will. Because you will constantly be seeking proof that the steps will work. So it's really up to you whether or not you're successful or not. Because I can tell you, if I walk into a room and I think somebody's an asshole, I'm constantly waiting for them to prove me right. And even if they do something nice, yeah, that's right, but he's still an asshole. Versus if I walk into a room and I see Bill and I have experience with Bill and Bill's a nice dude and I really like Bill, but maybe he does something asshole-ish to me, I'm going to look at him and go, that was just out of character. He's a good dude. Because I have a belief about Bill that he's one way, and if he acts contrary to that belief, that's the exception. If I have a belief about somebody that's negative and they act contrary to that, that's an exception. So it's all a mindset. So, when we became alcoholics and addicts, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. Either God is everything or else she is nothing. Either God is everything or else it is nothing. God either is or isn't. What is your choice to be? Arrived at this point, we were squarely confronted with the question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason towards the desired shore of faith. The outlines and promise of a new land had brought luster to tired and fresh courage to flagging spirits. Friendly hands had stretched out in welcome. We were grateful that reason had brought us so far, but somehow we couldn't step ashore. Perhaps we had been leaning too heavily on reason that last mile, and we did not want to lose our support. So that was natural, but let us think a little bit more. By the fact that it's different because you guys have to be here, but if this were a workshop and you guys were voluntarily here, which there are some people that are that way, you're brought here by a certain kind of faith. Like the fact that you're in this room, you have faith in the fact that this, at least for this moment, maybe not tomorrow, but this moment is better than what you've got out there. So you've got a certain kind of faith just by being here. That's why I asked the question in the beginning of the question really comes down to whether or not you believe what we're selling. Because if you don't believe what we're selling, guess what? It ain't going to work. But we're pretty good at selling. We're pretty good at sharing our experience and taking you to a place where possibly, just possibly, we've got something that you might want. Now, I'm pretty convinced that most of the people in this room would not want my life. But for me, it is the coolest freaking life that exists. Because it's exactly what I've wanted and what I get. Now, does that mean there are things that I wouldn't want to change and improve on? No, I'm constantly evolving and changing my life. But how many of you in here can say that you have exactly the life you wanted? Yeah. I have it. And it's mine. And you can't have it. Probably don't want it. But there's one out there for you too. This is the access point. The second step allows you into the possibility to do what the doctor's opinion talks about of recreating your life. You're all creators. Talks about it in all sorts of books.
Why don't you shoehorn those in?
Okay. I think I heard some stuff I've never heard you say before. I really like that. The Henry Ford. The second step, you know, I was reflecting as Brandon was talking about, I was doing a comparison of like my ideas about steps 2 and 3 currently versus what it was like for me in those two steps early on, and which would serve better in what I'm about to say. And I think it's a combination of the two. So we really focused last night heavily on this idea of surrender, and we may have created some fear in some of you around the idea that you can't do it yourself. But if you're looking for evidence of a surrender, in my opinion, you can find it in the second step, and I'm going to explain that to you. So when I was in treatment, this was the fifth and final time. And we were in the basement of the treatment center. Every afternoon we had to have this thing called step study. And we would read a chapter out of the 12 and 12. And I remember Andy, he was working at the center. He was one of the recovery techs. And he and I did not like each other. And we were white shirt at the time. We'd later become good friends, but during that period, we did not like each other. And he was doing a step two, and it was a beautiful day. The treatment center was there was a field, then a dock, and then a little lake. And I remember sitting on the couch and looking out and seeing the sun hit the water just with the right way, and the birds chirping and the breeze, and it was just a beautiful day. And we were talking about the second step, and Andy was talking about how, you know, the beautiful part of the 12 steps is the fact that you can create your own conception of God. And he goes, it doesn't matter how inadequate it is, because none of us can define and comprehend God, that power which is called God. And he had everybody in the basement look outside, and he said, look, can any of you make the wind blow the way it's blowing, and that sun shine and hit the water, and those birds chirping? And all of us were like, no, we can't do that. And he goes, would you guys all agree that there's some power in the universe that makes it possible for that to happen? And every single person said yes. And he goes, well, you've just discovered a power greater than yourself. We can move on to step three. When you have surrender, you will not debate. When you start debating, that's your evidence that you're not surrendered. That's what's played out with all the men I've sponsored when they get to step two. The ones that are currently in a state of surrender, they're like, I don't care. I just want to get to step three. I want to keep moving. But then you get there are individuals that like to really attempt to figure out something that you cannot figure out. It causes them to slow down immensely, and then their window of grace, the window of grace is temporary. You talk to these guys, Bill, about the window of grace?
Yeah, it'll show up.
Yeah. You guys know what I'm talking about when I say the window of grace will close? Yeah. And everybody's window is a different size. That's what's really screwy. Is my window of grace was pretty small because I needed to get through the steps really quickly before the voice of the liar reinserted itself in my consciousness and it began to talk me out a lot of stuff. And so some guys' window is extremely small. Other guys have bigger windows, but that's...
I'd say mine was probably 90 to 100 days, somewhere in there, because I really wasn't doing a whole lot of steps. I was sober. I was hanging out in the rooms. I've experienced other guys that... Hell, it's a week.
A week. And we're not even exaggerating.
Like... Get on it. Like, meet me in the morning every day this week, and we're doing step work, and it's triage. We're just going to stop the bleeding from where your arms just fell off. That's it.
And that word triage he just uses is really important, because this is a form of triage, what you guys are doing here at the Bridges. Another question you should ask yourself is, am I willing to do this for the rest of my life? Because... that's what you're signing up for.
But wait, it's one day at a time.
For the rest of your life.
Could you address in your experience, when that window closes through debate, taking our time, what's generally necessary to get that window back open?
Most alcoholics and addicts have to be pretty bangled before they commence to solve their problem.
Yeah, so the question is when the window closes, how do you get it reopened?
Get mangled.
Yeah. Go out there, burn it down. Remove option three.
Oh, God. You guys reminded me of this guy calls me it was just 3 weeks ago. He calls me. It's a guy Brandon and I have watched go in and out for the entire time I've been sober. So he was probably around before us. And he calls me in the middle of a crack run. And I'm on the phone with him. And he's on the tail end of he probably just spent a couple $100. So he's sitting there.
Self-pity.
Trying to decide what to do at this point. And he's expecting me to go pick him up and take him to detox. And he's asking me what he should do. And I'm like, I think you should just keep smoking crack. I think you should burn it down to the ground. Yeah, and pray to God you don't die. And so he was surprised that this was my advice. But this is the problem when we willfully, quote unquote, send ourselves to detox. It's better when we are crushed by the self-imposed crisis that we don't, like, it does, it's everything is done to us and through us, as opposed to us, okay, I got my tail between my legs, I'm about to run out of money, I can go get some good meals and go sit in this detox and put myself back together and come up with my next plan and design for what I'm about to do. But when we are full steam ahead and then we get leveled and we end up in detox, it's a difference. And that's why I was telling him with that. Now, had I had that conversation with a heroin addict, I don't know if I would have done that.
Yeah, it's
okay. Not with the fentanyl and stuff that's out there, but when you're, I know it is rare for someone to OD from crack. It just is.
Has anybody seen the movie Rounders? You know, when he's sitting there across from KGB and KGB makes a bet and he goes, "Nah, you don't have it." And he just knows, and KGB looks at him kind of confused, and he's like, "I'm gonna lay this down, and it's a monster, right?" It's because he saw something in KGB that was his tell, right? Well, I had a guy that I attempted to sponsor him 3 times. Tarek, I think, attempted once or twice. Had this really super nice, sweet ass truck, right? Like, it was nice. I mean, just everything. It was probably the nicest truck that I've ever been around or in. And this truck was this guy's god, literally. Like, he paid the like $250 a month to have the unlimited car washes, and like, shit was nice, right? And one of the times when he came back and he asked me to work with him, I told him he had to sell his truck. And he was like, "You're crazy. I'm never doing that." I'm like, "Well, then I'm not going to work with you." I was like, "You got to sell your truck and get one that's, you know, $7,000 to $10,000." And he's like, "Fuck you. I'm not doing that." I'm like, "Okay, cool." Willingness to do my way was not there. So every time this guy called me after a run, I had one question for him. "Do you still have your truck?" And he'd always say, "Yeah." And I'm like, "You're not ready." And I told him, I was like, "You gotta burn this shit down." Now, he was an alcoholic. He liked to put stuff up his nose too, but like, he, that was the test for me. That was his tell. Is if he was unwilling to get rid of that, he wasn't ready. That's not the case for, I mean, I've worked with guys that have their job, family, friends. It's like weird. It's like, what? How did you maintain relationships? But then there's other guys where they've got to be homeless. They got to go through the experience I went through that lost everything before became willing. There was a question. You had a question?
I just wanted to know the definition of
triage. Triage is like, so like when you go into an ER, right? They assess you quickly and then they try to stabilize you, right? So if you've got a gaping wound, they're not going to stitch it up and clean it up and do all that stuff. What they're going to do is they're going to bandage it to try to get it to stop. Okay? That's triage. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean it's fixed. That means that it's been placed in a thing where you're no longer going to die from that potentially in the next 2 hours.
Temporary
solution. Yeah. It's you know, hitting the high points to get you to a place where you're stabilized. If anytime I do the steps in a triage form with a guy, I always go back and do the steps again with him almost right after that, where we get the deep stuff. We do the deep cleaning. Okay? So that's what triage is. But thank you for asking the question.
That's a good question. And so the simplicity of the way that second step experience happened for me, it was so profound that I carried it through the rest of the steps. I just knew that there was a power. That's all I had to believe in, period, end of story. Well, if you ask me what my thoughts are about God today and my beliefs, they sound something like this. And currently, God is reality. God is everything that is happening, will happen, and has ever happened in the eternal moment. In my current conception, the only difference between self-will and God's will is a matter of perception or separation, which the ego creates. My current belief, self-will, is a delusion because God's will is all there is. For a human to believe that they are separate or have the power to alter God's will is a much conceited thought for me. God is moving me, talking through me, and viewing through me along with everyone else and everything at the same time eternally throughout existence. Everything that has happened, and will ever happen are all under God's perfect grace. In the big book, it states God is everything. In another book, it states that nothing acts but God. These statements are the most accurate statements as to our limited conception of God. Put quite simply, I am just a manifestation of God that we, with our human minds, call Tarek, in an attempt to understand and limit so that it makes sense to us. I'm just along for the ride to play my role in God's show of creation. Paradoxically, I am responsible to the rest of this world for every action that I experience, for everything that I do or don't do. Through ownership of my actions does my faith in God deepen. Knowing that I can stop worrying and trying to control the show because everything has and always will work out without me having to do anything. So that's quite a drastic difference. That's because of just some of the things that I have done over the years, and they put me in a position where these are my beliefs now. They're not right. They're not wrong. It just works for me. And so that was that's the evolution, or the two ends of the spectrum between how simple the first step was for me. The second step was when my surrender was there. I just had to look outside and know I didn't have the power to do any of that, and that was a higher power. Now, because of my morality has changed and my evolution as a human has changed, so my conception of God has changed along the same trajectory. I'm almost 12 years sober, and I think I've worked with a solid 4 or 5 conceptions over that 12 years, and the last 5 or 6 years have settled on one. Same thing applies to the third step. Thank God for this man Dante. If he had not been there to explain the third step to me the way he did, because I grew up in a religious home, but my parents were so busy my dad with his drinking and my mom with her career, and my grandmother, a woman of faith, but she didn't push us. And so God was never shoved down my throat, although I was in a very religious home. And so I always knew there was something. But I was very much an agnostic. You know, I knew there was something, and that's about it. You know, a Gnostic is someone who knows through direct experience. Agnostic doesn't know. An atheist actually believes they can prove the non-existence of God. And so Dante, we get to that third step, and he stressed, he was always a man that did not stress the word God, but he stressed the phrase personality change sufficient to bring about recovery and the psychic change. And for me, and I've been doing a lot of thinking about this, I think I made a decision to go after the psychic change. I made a decision that I didn't want to be the same person, so I wanted a personality change. And Dante guaranteed me that if I just made a decision to work steps 4 through 9, I would have a psychic change and a personality change. That's what it was. It was a decision to work the rest of the steps. So I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of the 12 steps as I understood them. I really did, knowing underneath all that was God, right? That, like, I knew that the God was going to be incorporated somehow, but my surrender was so deep that I just turned it over to the steps. I said, I'm just going to work the steps. That's my decision. That's how simple this third step can be if you have surrender. If you don't, you're gonna give yourself a brain hernia.
Sounds great to me.
I don't even know if that's possible, but you will break your fucking brain trying to figure out the difference between self-will and God's will. And this is why. So if you had looked at Tarek's life, August through November of 2007, and I knew people in the program, if they had looked, Tarek's living in self-will. He is self-will run riot. He is in constant collision with everything and everyone. He's the producer of confusion rather than harmony. Right. He is self-will run riot. But now, looking back, I am 100% convinced that was God moving me to my surrender. So if it was self-will then and now it's God's will, I mean, how? How is that possible? Some of the experiences I've had in my life that were born out of quote-unquote self-will were the best things for Tarek in this human body. They actually were the inspiration for tremendous growth and change. Right? But we label this idea of self-will with all these bad connotations because of, you know, the way we're taught sometimes. For me, it's I'm a second step proposition guy, which says that God is everything. I like that way more because on the self-will side, it tends to be a good breeding ground for a tremendous amount of self-judgment, self-loathing, trying to change myself, constantly beating up on myself for not showing up the way I want to show up, and continuously taking my will back as if, you know, I can do that. You know, the only thing I have found effective in making that decision is working steps 4 through 9, because they are opposite of the way I want to live life, really. At their core, there's a part of me that doesn't want to do it, and it contradicts the way I've lived up to this point. And so it makes it very effective in submitting to a way other than my own. And that's why we call it the surrender of the third step. But before you even work a third step, you have to be convinced that your life, doing it the way you're doing it, doesn't work, period. So the ABCs, that I am an addict and cannot manage my life, that no human can relieve me of my mental obsession, and that God, higher power, can and will if I do this work. I have to be convinced of those three ideas, or as Bill Wilson once wrote, I ought to reread the book or else throw it away. Being convinced, we are now at the third step. To me, you have to be convinced of those three things, or you're gonna poop out. Somewhere between steps 3 and 9, you will poop out. Right? And once you're convinced, that's like the second part of the third step. And then we have this thing called the third step requirement. Right? That you see your life run on your ideas and your beliefs all the time, the way you want to do it is hardly successful. So that would be the second part of the third step. And then you have to look at a decision. What does it mean to make this decision? So lately I've been asking guys, because, you know, at the end of the third step prayer, it says we thought long and hard before taking this step. Well, when I take guys through the steps, I have them think long and hard before they take this step. What does this decision mean to you? That you're about to offer yourself, right? I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will, to relieve me of the bondage of self, to take away my difficulty. So I have them take each phrase in that paragraph and ask yourself in your own words, don't use any other books, what does it mean to yourself, to you, to offer yourself? For this power to do whatever the hell it wants to do with you and build whatever it wants to do with you. What does that mean? And so I have them just sit with that for a few days before they take their third step prayer with me. I may not do that exercise with someone that's brand new. So now it comes in my comparison of how things have evolved for me. When someone's brand new, are you comfortable making a decision that to work the rest of these steps with me and see what happens on the other side? That's how it's got to be. Simple, and as you evolve, it can be more complex and you can have more fun with it. But the cool thing is it will create some excitement and some newness to it, and it won't get so stale and boring. Because once we get to the 11th step, one of the things I'm hoping to focus on this weekend is how to combat this idea of what happens when my prayer and meditation life becomes stale and boring, because that is a dangerous place to get to. All right. And I want to read on page. Brandon made a comment earlier. He said on page, if they put this as page 1, which was the
lack of power
is our dilemma. There's another thing on page 62 that if they put on page 1, we would have turned and ran. Selfishness and self-centeredness. That is the root of our problem. driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows. So I want to talk about this word driven, because driven not only shows up when it comes to the substances of alcohol, mind-altering drugs, it also shows up in other areas of our life, because that's the part, like when you take away the drugs and the alcohol, you're still left with the addictive process that lives inside of us. And it will feed on other things. And so driven, one of the definitions in the dictionary, compelled or impelled to steer, to forcibly take a course of action, guided by another force. So when we are driven, we are consumed with self-centered, selfish behaviors. And in an unaware state of consciousness, we're driven through life by 100 forms of these fears and delusions. So I want to look at this idea of driven versus making a choice, because it applies here too. Ask yourself a question. Do I have areas in my life in which I am being driven versus making a choice? I identify these areas by looking for fear, things in my life where I'm not considering. There's a lack of consideration and a reactivity as opposed to response. So, you know, one of my greatest teachers said the greatest trick the egoic mind plays on me is convincing me that clean and sober, I am making choices. But when I look at these so-called choices, they're absolutely insane. So now I understand I'm not making choices in some areas. I am being driven. There is no choice, because in self-will, quote unquote, there can't be a choice. There's only the manifestation of how I think my self-will should manifest in this specific situation. So the concept of choice comes from that state of neutrality or unselfish motives. It's an intellectual sorting out process, like I referenced earlier today around the first step in the power of choice, which I'm presented with options, consider them, and either reject, deny, or accept them. And so I want to remind you that there's a reason the authors of the Big Book did not use the word denial. Instead, they use the words like illusion, delusion, obsession, all of which signal a low state of consciousness in which one cannot tell the difference between what's true and what's false. In this state of consciousness, I have no choice but to be driven without choice and most likely harming others along the way. Obsessions and loss of control can be experienced with so much more than only mind-altering substances. When we are driven in life, it's very possible we're experiencing an obsession and loss of control. Let's look at our personal experience. That will tell the story. Now, this was a little sheet that when I owned my recovery center, this was a sheet I created. We actually did a workshop on this. This was one of the workshops you had to do in your first week or two that you were at the launching pad. Because this thing doesn't just go away because we put the drugs and the alcohol down, but this is where our awareness has to be as we go into the third step. And we take this third step. What is this idea of turning our will and our life over to the care and direction of a God, that we, God of our understanding? It's to break free of this cycle, right? To be able to heed warnings, to look at evidence and proof based on experience that allows us to actually pause when agitated or doubtful and ask God for the right thought or action. That pause comes out of an awareness that if there is no pause, I'm in this driven state. And it's okay. We're all going to fall into it. But to me, this is what the third step is about. This is the description between 60 to 62 of being the producer, the director, the light guy, the sound guy, all at the same time, right? My time is more important than your time, but I don't want you to know that, right? I need to be right, and I'm gonna find a really cunning and crafty way to always be right and not making you feel wrong, right? This is the way that the ego evolves and becomes really slick in how it operates. And so those are things that I struggle with sometimes, because there's a part of me that does think my time is more valuable than other people's time. I see it show up every time someone's scheduled to be somewhere with me at a certain time and they're like 10 minutes late, and that part of me just pops right up.
Wrong.
What's gotten a lot better for me, man. Smonties used to show up, they'd be like 10 minutes late. You don't respect me and you're a liar. That's what I would say to them. And they'd be like, what are you talking about? You committed to be here at 3 o'clock and you're not here. Which means you don't respect me and you're a liar. And I don't do that anymore. Nor do I want anyone in here to do that. That was such a dickhead thing to do. You know, I can't believe I used to do stuff like that. It makes me cringe. Now I'm just like, hey, if you show up, we're going to do some step work. If you don't, rock on. My life's going to be great either way. Yeah. Yeah. So the third step. So I want to read this. You can reflect on it after it's done reading. We're going to end this session, but we're going to start the next session at 2 o'clock with the third step prayer. We're all going to take it together because I want to do it at the beginning because it says we need to launch into inventory next. So I don't want to do the third step now and take a 2-hour break before we launch into inventory.
Well, so think, I guess, your homework over lunch is to think well over whether or not you want to say the prayer.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you know, there's so many of us in here are manly men that are big Billy badass that nobody can mess with us. Right? That's right. I'm right there with you. Okay, so here's your chance to be the badass, right? If you really don't want to do the prayer, then I think most of us will get on our knees, and you don't. Prove to the world how badass you are that you're just not going to do it. Where's your conviction? Right? Or do the prayer with us. See what happens.
All right. This is a little reading called In Each. I was wondering how any living thing can be familiar with the divine God or the beloved without having some of that divine God or the beloved within it. How do creatures rest and find their joy? An answer came as I reflected. Everything comes from the beloved, the creator, God. God is in each compassion, each companion, each calamity, every lust, any conversation among friends, secrets murmured, a spray of sweet basil, determination, mercy, benevolence, the changing nature of what you want, prayer, meditation, love, everything flows from and returns to God. Leaf, stem, calyx, any cause and effect, every sleep returning to waking. All right. That's it, boys and girls.